All lines are now bridged.
Great. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the U.S. CDI Task Force. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and we really appreciate you joining us today. And on behalf of ONC, I want to thank the co-chairs and the entire task force for last week's presentation to the HITAC and the unanimous vote to adopt those Phase 2 recommendations. So we know it's a lot of hard work, and we really appreciate it. I'm going to open up today's meeting with roll call, and I'll start with our co-chairs. Stephen Lane.
I am here.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
I'm here as well.
Ricky Bloomfield. Hans Bootendijk. Grace Cordovano.
I'm here.
Jim Gerges. Ken Kalamoto. John Kilborn.
Here.
Les Leonard. Glenn McDonald. Aaron Meary. Brett Oliver. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Abby Sears is away this week. Sasha Termont.
Good morning.
Andrew Truscott. Cheryl Turney is joining us in a little bit. Dan Breeman.
Good morning.
And Denise Webb. Okay, thank you, everybody. And I'll turn it over to our co-chairs, Stephen and Leslie.
Thank you so much, Mike, and welcome, everybody. After you all had a bit of a break, we, as you know, were successful. Whoop, am I muted? Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes,
okay, sorry. Thought I heard a comment. So while you were all on break for the last couple of weeks, we put together the final version of our Phase 2 recommendations. And the transmittal document, we successfully presented those at HITAC last week. They were unanimously embraced by the HITAC, and I believe, Mike, have now been transmitted to the national coordinator. Is that right?
Yes, they were transmitted yesterday.
Perfect, and thank you, Mike, for all the work that you've done to pull those together. So that went very well. There was not a lot of discussion or certainly criticism that we heard at HITAC. We've got a number of HITAC members here. So if there was something that stood out to you, I'd be very interested, for you to share that with the task force members who are here today. But but I really think it's a testament to the hard work that all of you have done to help us to formulate and clarify the recommendations to date. So this meeting today, I'll just pause there and see, anybody who was at HITAC, and maybe Arian, you've got a unique perspective because you're not usually with us on this call, any sense about that discussion and anything that we should share with the task force?
No, I mean, I think the sense of it was, as you said, met with approval and agreement. This discussion that the US CDI task force hit on has been a discussion that's been a theme all the way from the standards committee days, which is if you organize around the floor of interoperability for the country, you don't have a great mechanism for raising the ceiling. And so I think a lot of the comments, a lot of the framework that you put together was a very thoughtful framework for how do you pull things and mature them in advance of becoming the floor, which, as I said, has been a long-term area of policy coordination and something I don't think that we've done right as a nation historically. And so I think the framework and recommendation that you put together solves a critical need for the country.
Well, that's great. Coming from you, that means a lot, Arian. Thanks. Others
it,
who are
it does, Arian. Thank you.
Sasha, I know you were there. I don't know who else. I guess David, you were there certainly as a presenter. Curious
and
about other people's observations.
Stephen, this is Michelle Schreiber. I was also there. First of all, you did a terrific job, and I think that we as a committee should recognize that, and thank you for that.
Amen.
I thought the discussion was really very good, and it was supportive of taking it, you know, further in the future, at the same time balancing what is available to people now. So, but Stephen, really, to you, thank you.
Hey,
Stephen
was the perfect partner on that. Yes. David.
This is David. Since you mentioned that I was there, I'll just add a comment to Arian's comment, and this is coming from an outsider's point of view, not normally listening to your presentations at High Tech. But I agree that the on-deck presentation made a lot of sense, and, you know, as Arian described, lays out a well-thought-out pathway. But from an outsider's point of view, it struck me that there might be a little bit of a catch-22 that you guys are going to have to watch for as it gets implemented, which is that, if I remember, in order to advance to stage 2 or level 2, whatever it was called, you have to be deployed in 4 different EHR systems. That's a pretty high barrier to achieve for something that's not required by anybody. So I just would caution you that you could have made it too hard to get the ceiling raised.
That's a really good point, David, and thank you for raising it. We did not specifically discuss lowering that bar. I mean, that was set by ONC early on. And actually, Al, can you comment? Is it really four systems? I thought it was 3 or more. I don't have it in front of me.
I think it was 4, but I don't know that that's it was 4 or more. I think that's what we set, and we haven't really gotten that kind of feedback that is a particularly high bar. But we understand that in some cases it might be.
And if I remember the way I read it, and I might have been wrong, it was 4 different vendors, not just 4 instances of EHRs.
Yes,
4 vendors doing something hard is, as we all know, not easily achieved. There's got to be some strong drive to make that happen, either regulatory pressure or some market opportunity. And it just struck me as that we might not get a lot of things advanced to level 2 once the easy stuff is done.
Yeah, I think you make a really important point, David, and especially given our focus on minority use cases. You know, minority use cases might be supported by a smaller number of vendors. And I think that particular requirement was really, it came to be when the vision was that this was really something that all, you know, EHRs should be able to do to meet majority use cases. So I think it's a great point, and perhaps something that we might squeeze into our task 3 work. We'll see if that fits in as we proceed with this. Others who were there, any other thoughts about the discussion or the contents?
I would just add that the group was very complimentary and very very little questions. So good work, everyone. I think we covered our bases well and made sure that our recommendations were thoughtful. So appreciate all the due diligence of each one of you.
Just getting back. Sorry, Denise. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just on the phone right now. I'm not back
Thank
at
you.
My house yet, but on the computer. Of course, I was there too, but I wanted to let you know that I didn't really have anything to add, and appreciate David bringing up that point about the minimum of 4 systems. I guess that was a nuance I didn't quite notice.
All right. I do want to remind people that our past meeting notes are posted on the web. You go to the HITACH calendar to find those there, and we did catch up from the last meeting that we had. I think the ONC team has been doing a really great job turning those around quickly, and Leslie and I are trying to support that work. Okay, so talking a little bit about the work that's before us, our phase three, task three, really focusing on recommendations related to USCDI version three. So all the three is aligned here. I don't know, do we have the tasks on the next slide? I don't have the slide deck up in front of me, I should. What's on the next slide here? Okay, we did that. All right, that's fine. We can go back to where we were. Sorry about that. So our task three does have to do with ONC priorities for USCDI in the version three cycle that will be starting up soon. Al, I think the kickoff of this cycle really begins in earnest, even though the site has been open, and I think you've said people can submit new items now, that not much has been coming in over the course of the springtime and the winter before it, but that with the publication of version two anticipated next month, there will also be a publication of kind of guidance and the framework for the version three submission cycle, hopefully well informed by this last raft of recommendations that we sent forward. Do you have anything to say about kind of that process or how you anticipate that going? Have there been any changes in ONC's approach for the publication of V2 and the initiation of the V3 submission cycle?
Not really anything significant. We plan on publishing on July 8th, which will include updates to a new standards document as well as the website that'll show all the changes. And we hope to also simultaneously publish either an update or a confirmation of the evaluation criteria and the prioritization criteria, along with some other language about where ONC feels like things ought to be headed for the version three cycle and beyond. So that's that. Basically, all those are still in place.
Great. And I know that we've offered a lot of input on all three of those things, evaluation, prioritization, and the clarification of kind of the future of USCDI. And certainly, the sense I get is that you've heard us loud and clear, and that you're taking that all into consideration. But if there are questions that arise as you guys are hammering out the final language, obviously, you're welcome to reach out to us as the co-chairs. And we could certainly reach out to the task force as a whole if any further clarification is needed.
Sure.
Wonderful. Okay, so what we are planning for our phase three, what we as the co-chairs and the ONC team have put together, is a process of hearing from stakeholders focused in the areas that we have identified as high priority. So the first presentation that we're going to have today by Arian and David is really coming from the ISP task force, the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. The ISP task force is in its second iteration under the HITACH presently, and they are really looking forward to the standards as they evolve and helping to make recommendations about them. And of course, USCDI is integrally dependent on the development of those standards. So I think that while we're focused on kind of what's ready to go and what are the aspirational goals at the data level, the ISP task force is looking at the standards and where they're going. So in the couple of presentations that this ISP task force has made to the HITACH, there have been specific comments and recommendations about USCDI. So So we felt that it was valuable to have Arian and David come and cover that material for the task force, for those of you who didn't hear it at the HITAC, because I think that provides some really nice guidance for us. After today, we have planned for next week a meeting focused on public health. As you all know, we've identified public health use cases as critically important for supporting, and there are folks at CDC and folks who are involved in the public health interoperability work group that is sponsored by CDC, and there is also a public health task force under HITAC presently, co-chaired by Carolyn Peterson and Janet Hamilton. All of these folks are going to be coming to join us next week to have a deep dive discussion about public health use cases, and specifically, in the end, you know, what are the opportunities for USCDI so we can use that to inform our phase three recommendations. We're also looking at having a meeting focused on equity and disparities. Obviously, there was an executive order, and all the groups within HHS have responded to that executive order with how they're going to be approaching equity and disparities, and we're going to see if we can tease out any USCDI focused needs related to all of that work. And then we've also planned a presentation for July focused on social determinants of health. Here again, an area that we have highlighted as critically important going forward. And we're going to bring the folks from the Gravity Project. Mark is helping to orchestrate that so we can focus there on where they're going. And at Al's suggestion, we decided to hold that one until after version 2 is published, because we feel that how version 2 incorporates our earlier recommendations on the SDOH data elements is going to inform that discussion as to what will be required in terms of version 3. And then also Leslie has reached out to our friends at PCORI, looking at patient-centered outcomes and the research angle on this to, again, determine whether there are particular needs related to the future of USCDI and version 3 in particular, that relate to research. So what we're doing is thinking about, going through these key areas, speaking with the real deep subject matter experts to help to identify USCDI priorities that come out of them. So I'll pause there and see if, Leslie, you want to add to that, or if anyone has any questions or comments about that approach.
I think that we would be also open to suggestions of where we see there's gaps for subject matter experts, so please keep that in mind.
And so how many meetings we have between now and the end of August will really depend on how those presentations go and our discussion goes. We also are committed to going back through both our spreadsheet and our document of prior task force recommendations. We have a number of items that we deferred to our task three, and we'll be reviewing those as well. And those that will likely end up being separate from these SME presentations. All right. So any questions about that? I don't see any hands up. Denise, anyone on the phone? Great.
Oh, all good.
Well, with that,
that's good.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for that affirmation. So with that introduction, we are going to turn it over to David and Arian. Maybe you guys can also just introduce yourselves briefly for those who don't already know you. And we're going to hear about the work of the ISP Task Force, Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force, for 2021, and how those recommendations relate to the work of our group.
Yeah, David.
Thanks, Stephen. I think I know most everybody on the call from previous task forces and other context. My name is David McCauley. I retired a couple of years ago after close to 30 years at Cerner, where I was Senior Vice President for Medical Informatics. I was also on the HIT Standards Committee that kind of helped launch all of these processes that we're still now wrangling into productive use.
And then you can think of me as a junior David McCauley, Ari Malik, SVP of R&D for Change Healthcare, and have mostly followed in my interoperability career, picking up ideas, stray ideas that David has, and running them forward a little bit.
No comment.
So we think about the US CDI and the ISP as two task force that are joined at the hip. We think about USCDI as defining the what for interoperability, defining the information that is exchanged in interoperability. And we think about the ISP as putting together the policy framework for advancing the how for interoperability, in particular, the standards and implementation guidance associated with vocabulary, transport, and content standards that are the mechanisms by which data in the US CDI gets moves from point A to point B. And so the thought process was that since we are so closely coupled, and because we made specific call-outs to US CDI, it would be a good thing for us to share some of the content and context of our recommendations to the HITACH to this group so that we could make sure that we had the proper alignment. We have all of the recommendations with the exception of our Section 3 on vocabulary as approved recommendations. There's a little bit of controversy over the vocabulary recommendations that perhaps we can talk about when we get there, but I don't believe that materially affects some of the work that we're doing with USCDI coordination. So we'll skip over a bunch of slides here and get into the meat of the recommendations. We focused our recommendations, so if we can skip, let's just try skipping slides until it looks like we're caught up, until we get to the first recommendation slide, please. One more. There we go. Okay. So for context, when we were thinking about prioritization for the ISP, the P is prioritization, we contemplated a set of priorities that included health equity, future pandemic preparedness, or the lessons of our shared experience with SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19, previous ONC priorities and previous task force items that the previous incarnation of the ISP task force, led by the esteemed Dr. Lane, had recommended that we take on. And at the end of that prioritization process, we came up with a framework that addressed some three recommendations in general foundational areas. That is to say, standards and implementation guidance that we believed as a task force brought the nation forward in a set of areas that were foundational in nature and cross-cutting. Three areas of recommendation, we'll get there, associated with research, so really the lessons of COVID, one of the positive, the few positive lessons of our experience, our shared experience, is that we demonstrated that we actually can implement a learning health system on top of a set of deployed EHRs. And so we make recommendations regarding the learning health system and deploying the EHR community for real-world and pragmatic research. We make recommendations associated with advancing efficiency and reducing physician burden, particularly on the overlap between clinical and administrative areas. And we make recommendations relative to situational awareness and recommendations associated with health equity. We deferred the recommendations on public health data systems to the Public Health Data Systems Task Force, so that ordinarily would have been an important area for our discussion. So we're first going to go over the foundational areas. Most of these are sort of non-overlap relative to USCDI. In particular, we call for better maturity, production, adoption, and eventual incorporation for HL7 fire standards to address workflow flexibility, starting with fire CDS hooks, clinical decision support hooks, which is this crazy idea that that a certain David McCauley came up with and Josh sort of took and ran with, Josh Mandel took and ran with, that allows for CDS clinical decision support to be plugged in into EHRs, and it solves a problem for EHR vendors in that they're always trying to plug in a variety of CDS systems, and it solves problems for CDS systems vendors who are trying to get their content plugged into EHRs, and clearly solves problems for clinicians and health systems who value additional decision support without doing a ton of custom and bespoke integration and configuration. It turns out those same workflow hooks can be used for things like decision support for data capture, for pregnancy status and travel status for in a Zika situation, or travel status in a COVID-19 pandemic, or some of the same foundational standards are actually used for interoperability related to EPA, electronic prior authorization. We also believe that fire subscriptions provide some of the same general workflow characteristics. And this is akin to some of the work that the Argonaut Project did to open up fire-based APIs and make the EHR more of an API platform. These two foundational standards help drive flexible workflow that is integrated into the EHR. David, since you've got so much history and are really the inspiration for some of this work, I wonder if you have any comment here.
No, I think you've covered it pretty well. I would say I might flip the order between Josh Mandel and others. I think I was integral in identifying the problem, and Josh proposed the solution with the CDS hook.
As we all do. That's the way right. of the world in interoperability.
Right. Right. Josh was phenomenally productive during that era.
Yeah.
Of many of these things. Arno, I think the main point here that everyone I'm pretty sure is already aware of is that these things have to be implemented with specific guidance and tested and refined. None of them off the shelf or just plug and play. So our call, I think, here is to continue to focus on these particular techniques and make them work well enough to actually deliver on their promise.
Exactly. And then the same thing for Fire Questionnaire, which is about, again, plugging into EHRs to collect additional data that's not traditionally collected in the EHR. This is a core part of the gravity specifications, but we believe it also has applicability for pragmatic research. And then the same thing for fire consent. Again, it comes up in the gravity project relative to SDOH, but it also comes up pretty obviously in a situation for research. So we believe these fire standards are foundational. Let's go to the next slide. We do make just one piece on fire. We do make some commentary relative to USCDI that we, in the actual transmittal text, that we presume that as USCDI adds data or data classes into USCDI, that there will be corresponding work to make sure those data classes are incorporated into implementation guidance associated with interoperability. Otherwise there's an implication that we're all dressed up and nowhere to go with respect to the data that's collected in USCDI. So we believe that that level of alignment with ONC is an important consideration, that ONC is sort of shepherding the implicit alignment between data, new data capture or new data interoperability relative to USCDI and the associated standards and implementation guidance that are the mechanisms by which that flows. So, you know, as a trivial example, if we're collecting additional data on sexual orientation or gender identity or some of the other data elements that the USCDI task force has contemplated, right now there is no way for that data to flow in a standardized way via interoperability. There are pretty obvious consent mechanisms that need to be contemplated for those workflows. So our perspective is the USCDI work is the first stage in a broader standards evolution to address interoperability for USCDI data elements. Second set of recommendations relates to common data models. And again, here's the obvious alignment with USCDI. So USCDI really calls for data classes and some level of constraint and specification on the data, on the types of data that are interchanged. There is a model component that is associated with that data. In particular, there's a fire representation of that data that exists in a tree-like structure, rooted at patient, and then a variety of attributes about patient, some of those attributes having sub-attributes. And then there's a implied relational model that's used for analytics, particularly for research. And we believe that lining all of those up is an important activity by ONC that, if done correctly and well, helps downstream actors, in particular in the learning health system world, better take advantage of the data that's collected clinically in order to drive research and also administrative uses. We make pains in the recommendations to note that we're not calling for research to be driving data capture in the EHR. What we're calling for instead is that as USCDI expands data classes, that we do the lining up work to make sure that the data that's routinely collected in EHRs is maximally applicable to research and administrative efficiency. So in particular, we call for ONC to continue to map USCDI to HL7 FHIR and older foundational standards, build a clear and rapid roadmap to expand USCDI. And in particular, call out here that we contemplate that as USCDI expands, that there are areas of maximal leverage for research needs and there are areas of maximal leverage for administrative needs that are win-wins for clinicians. In particular, relative to driving administrative activity that's currently an administrative burden. Here's our comment that we want to clarify that expanded USCDI data definitions apply to bulk fire and other ways that data flows. And then we also call for work with industry stakeholders to map USCDI, and I think we didn't get the language updated for this version, but to a common research data model and to HL7. So again, we think this work of alignment for research, alignment for fire, between USCDI is a critically important activity that ONC can promulgate. So I'm going to pause here. David, any other additional comments here? I think this is an area where the USCDI task force might have some comment. Stephen, how do you want to handle commentary? Should we just go through it all and then open for questions at the end, or do you want to go through questions incrementally?
Well, I mean, why don't we forge ahead? Yeah. We're watching for raised hands. So if anybody on the task force, you know, wants to jump in, just there's a hand. There's Hans. So we'll do that now. Thanks, Hans.
Morning, Aaron. How are you doing?
Hey,
just want to underscore 2A1 here is that I think that's an important notion and recommendation you're making, that mapping is important. And I'm not sure whether that includes not only HSUV2, but NCPDP, other standards, because we ultimately need to make sure is that if we agree on USCDI, that the data, no matter how it flows, it starts with a V2 and NCPDP or whatever, that it's consistently represented across the board. Long task. Not easy, but that ultimately is where we need to keep in mind and constantly work to make it happen.
That's exactly right, Hans. And we make the same recommendations in our administrative section. We make the same recommendations with regard to terminology for e-prescribing. So, you know, we're sort of deliberate as such as, but it's a useful comment that we probably should be mentioning. We do mention X12 and NCPDP in the administrative section. And we mentioned Rx norm with respect to e-prescribing. It's a clear, obvious call out that that NCPDP is a clinical interoperability mechanism with regard to e-prescribing. So thanks for that comment. Let's go on to the next slide. So this is the most controversial section, spoiler alert, of our recommendations. In particular, I believe the set of controversy here is related to international across map to international standards, and particular to procedural terminology where representatives from the AMA have additional commentary they'd like to share with us relative to how CPT is currently being used internationally. We've made recommendations as a task force that are aligned with corresponding recommendations from NCVHS. They make a set of very detailed recommendations relating to administrative terminology. We make a set of high-level policy frameworks that we recommend that ONC work with federal stakeholders to establish policy that moves terminology standards that are developed in accordance with. And again, there's a whole lot of regulatory and government policy geeky language here, but basically that there's a consensus process for managing terminology standards in accordance with broad recommendations that these federal advisory committees have made to the U.S. federal government, that the licenses are associated with open use. The language that NCVHS used is free or very low cost, and are designed to address multiple needs so that we can use one and the same terminology standard across multiple contexts, and that our international across map to international standards to allow for multi-regional pooled research, again, in the context where, for example, we have emergent drug use in use of already approved compounds to treat and it's a novel condition. It would be useful to pool the research that's being done in the UK with the research that's being done in the US to create a larger pooled data set. And again, when we talk about research, we're talking about this more in the context of a learning health system than we are talking about the context of a pharma-sponsored research for which there's already well-defined mechanisms that sort of sit outside of clinical data. So we're really contemplating the use of the EHR as a platform for emergent real-world clinical research to address a continuous learning approach, in particular looking at approved compounds and approved therapies and seeking to optimize their use for clinical outcomes. And then we have a whole set of very geeky terminology recommendations. Number one, just working with federal stakeholders to align existing terminology meeting the policy. This is consistent with a broad set of recommendations that a number of people have had, that lab interoperability is being impeded because at least some labs are not using LOINC and UCM and SCOMED CT. So we make recommendations for alignment there. If we go to the next slide, our quite controversial point on procedural terminology, harmonization on 3D, 3E relative to aligning up SCOMED CT and ICD-11. When we finally do a transition to ICD-11, it would be nice if we didn't have warring and competing terminologies. And then Hans, this is where we make the comment relative to RX norm and NDC, where anybody who's done e-prescribing knows the pain of NDC cross-mapping to RX norm, where you have to use, you know, something like a representative NDC code that isn't actually what you're saying, but you've got to, because you have to throw an NDC code on to make all the machinery work, you end up throwing some random NDC code, and it's just not ideal from an interoperability perspective. And, you know, much of the issue here is a coordination issue between ONC and FDA relative to terminology associated with drugs. So again, super geeky, but very important to make USCDI work. And, you know, we contemplate this actually is lined up with USCDI recommendations for vocabulary. Stephen, I'm just going to let you be the MC if we have questions.
Yeah, we have a couple of hands up. Clem?
On the side of the databases or the data models, I think mostly these were referring to research data models, not clinical data models, because FHIR kind of does the job at that, but it also accommodates research. But in that context, I think we got to remember that only some of the models support USDI-like vocabulary standards. And without them, it's hopeless. You can't do the job. I mean, you got to get the vocabulary standardized in the model. And so when we think about, you know, kind of converging on a model, we should really focus on those that are already converged on USCDI. And secondly, there's already some nice work going on between two of the big models, OMOP and FHIR, and a couple of the other, and I'm sure PCORNET is very close. And I think what we really need is money to help them move their users across to whatever becomes a new one. So that's one thing. On the vocabulary side, NCVHS didn't take as specific a position as is in your proposal. What they said was we want to eliminate the difficulty on the boundary between research, clinical care, and administration, and kept it a little more open. And I think they had, there's a variety of ideas behind that that were not explicitly stated. So those are the two major things I wanted to say. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and again, I think there's some misunderstanding about our procedural recommendations, that all we're looking for is, it's actually just a re-emphasis on 3B, which is moving, transitioning the nation towards terminology meeting the policy. We're certainly not calling for one terminology system over another. You know, none of us have the we didn't assemble the experts that are associated with calling for one terminology system over the other. We're just looking at a policy framework and suggesting that ONC work with stakeholders to apply the policy framework, which, as I noted, I think is broadly in alignment with the NCVHS recommendation. But we're going to hear
another comment. I don't think we should focus exclusively on one country as the international source of data, because an OMOP, I think there's 50 million database people in from Korea. So
right.
Plus,
So Clem, I think we're saying the same thing, which is, you know, sort of island national standards aren't that useful if we're thinking about pooled analyses, and it's useful to get to a set of standards that are international.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Thank
cool.
you.
Cool. Thank you.
Dan Vreeman, you have your hand up.
Yeah. Thanks for this. This is really wonderful. I had a question in the NCVHS deliberation around terminology, vocabulary stuff. One of the themes was this general idea of kind of, it's nice to have one vocabulary per, I don't know, content area, domain, sort of data class, if you will, and rather than this sort of eternal work of maintaining mappings and harmonizing, et cetera. I wondered if your task force had any conversation around kind of pulling up a high level recommendation sort of to that effect. It comes out in some of these more specific things, but something at a higher level. I wonder if you had some comments on that.
No, thank you. That's an important comment. And this is something that Clem was really helpful in the, when we thought about research model work. What we were explicitly calling for was not the creation of meta models to cross map between models, but, you know, lo and behold, a model for doing research. And as Clem notes, a model that is cross mapped to USCDI. Likewise, for terminology, we're sort of at pains to talk about areas where we believe that there's already alignment towards convergence to a terminology system. There are two areas, I think, when we're talking about this that are sort of thorny. ICD-10, ICD-11, and SNOMED-CT, and SNOMED-CT, ICD, and CPT that are the thorniest of these areas. I agree with you that it would be a good idea if we aligned on a terminology. I don't know that we've done the work to make the recommendation that we should move the nation towards a terminology. I think this sort of comes out in the cross map to international standards to allow pooled multi-regional pooled research, that our intent is to drive that direction to the extent possible. So it's an important comment. I'm certainly in alignment with the notion. Just as you know, the WHO, ITSADU, AMA, mega alignment that would need to happen there, may pull the Earth's tides out of alignment and cause massive flooding. So, I think we generally agree. I think we're trying to, as Clem notes, make pains to talk about a policy recommendation. And make suggestive gestures towards an end stage.
Yeah, just a comment on that. I think there's one, you know, some of these things are long range idealistic goals, but there's some very pragmatic stuff that is a real world problem today, and at least it was when I was last working on EHR. For example, the distinction between a billing diagnosis and the problem list and physicians being forced to pick different terminologies to describe what happened in a visit, and ONC setting rules about what can and can't be in a problem list, and it ends up really being a burden on physicians, and it generates lost information because it's too much work to recode things twice. So those problems have been around for a long time. We ought to try to solve them.
Yeah. Completely agreed, and this is also some of the feedback that the research community gave, which is, look, at the end of the day, what gets documented in the EHR is administratively driven, and we'd be able to do a better learning health system if we had clinically driven documentation for which administrative, you know, billing needs flowed out, as opposed to, you know, rather the other way around. And as I think anybody who's been close to clinical care knows, there's what physicians need to appropriately diagnose and treat and plan care for patients, and then there's what's needed to document in the encounter. And at the end of the day, it's useful to be able to get paid for the care that you deliver, and so the documentation needs to get driven by billing requirements. Why don't we go on, unless there's other questions, why don't we go on to the next section, because I'm sort of confident.
I think Leslie had a comment.
Oh, fantastic.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Hey, so one controversy that's happening, I think, related to all of this is the licensing issues around these coding vocabularies do not require, when the data is passed, that it is human readable. This becomes a problem for any consumer-based app that might be connected, and then how do we then see what those codes mean? So the code might be passed on to that consumer-based app. No one can see what it means. They're going to call the provider. They're going to call the payer. They're going to wonder what that means. And this is irresponsible. So how can we Was this addressed in your group? How can we promote this lack?
Thank you for that. So as again, a little bit of meta commentary here, that's a side effect of some of the licensing rules that we have for terminology. In the way that we license IP, you can't put IP or copyright around data, but you can around text. And so it's the pieces of text that are the explanatory comment or content that are the pieces that you can put restrictions, IP licensing around. I think our recommendations relative to open terminologies are consistent, Leslie, with this call to make sure that everybody in the ecosystem can get access to good human readable content. I think we all understand that developing such content requires money. We need an appropriate sustainability framework for being able to do that. But that framework should be licensed in such a way that it's not onerous for a PHR, a patient app. I think PHR is so old school that I've completely dated myself. A patient app, patient controlled data, that licensing is not so onerous as to effectively tax the adoption of those uses and allow for the obscure piece of letters and numbers to be translated into human readable text.
Yeah, it's a really big deal.
I was just saying, particularly true when the vocabulary is required, you don't have the option of substituting something else. It shouldn't be a barrier to use a required vocabulary by a consumer.
And also, if we believe that the patient access is the access to the record and the way that the record is coded, then then it is a requirement of access, and it should be human readable. And it will. It's a justice issue that needs to be considered. And I believe a form of information blocking, if we consider stakeholders, need to be made ignorant by deliberate design. So there you go.
Thank
but
you.
I appreciate
thank
your
you.
Help.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So let's go on to health equity. We're all agreeing, and I think at this point we just need to make sure that this alignment flows through into the full advisory committee. With respect to health equity, we re-endorse the USCDI recommendations relating to HL7 Gravity Project nomenclature and value set standards. We recommend that the ISA track interoperability priorities identified by the Gravity Project, and we note capture of SDOH and capture of individual consent. I'm sure Mark Savage is on to violently disagree with these recommendations. We make recommendations to make sure, and so this is a super geeky item, and so I'm going to gloss 4C. When we discovered the issues that we had with identifying disproportionate impact of COVID-19, lack of testing, lack of vaccination, et cetera, among specific communities, when we thought about how to better address contact tracing, one of the major obstacles was that demographic information, address information, et cetera, was being captured in the EHR, but it wasn't flowing through to the lab. And so there was a secondary cleanup at the lab in order to flow it through to public health. And when you look at the root cause of that issue, it ends up being that we as in many things in healthcare, we've done our lab ordering interfaces in ways that address the administrative needs of lab ordering, but not necessarily the clinical needs of lab ordering. So the order flows through with the minimum information that's required to address the test result and the analytes, but not the information that's required to give context to those test results and analytes. And in particular, for example, age, race and ethnicity, gender, address information, all the information that was necessary to flow through to public health was missing. And so these recommendations are about making sure that the deployed interoperability addresses capture and exchange of demographic and contact data for multiple purposes, including for public health. Likewise, there was work that ONC had worked on with USPS on better capturing address information. We believe that work is important for geolocation of information to address, for example, geolocated outbreaks. Here in the Bay Area, we discovered that certain zip codes and census tracts had a disproportionately high COVID impact, but we didn't have that awareness in time to muster the appropriate public health response to those areas that are disproportionately impacted. And that's just one of these areas where better geolocation data would help us track in real time social disparities. Let's go on to the next slide. All right, now we get to EHR data use for research. We support the catalog of common research data models and support existing work by stakeholders to evaluate, map, and harmonize to a common foundational research model mapped to the USCDI and cross-map to FHIR. So as Clem notes, you know, our call out is to align, support the work that stakeholders are doing to align to a common research model, that research model is cross-mapped and aligned with USCDI and FHIR. We've got common terminology, we've got common concepts, and then, you know, we note that we're not looking for a meta model. We're looking for supporting the community in aligning towards a research model. And again, just take pains to note, when we talk about a research model in this context, we're not talking about, you know, industry-sponsored clinical research. We're talking about a learning health system, pragmatic research, recovery type comparative effectiveness research. Because there are a number of federal actors who are involved in such research models, and research is done in federal healthcare provider settings, we believe that the U.S. federal government can be an important arm in helping this alignment. We believe that ONC should create sections in the ISA and track both the models and standards and implementation guides for better supporting the use of EHRs as a platform for pragmatic research, in particular consent, which we've already addressed, prospective randomization, enrollment, and de-enrollment. So, you know, one of my comments, one of the things we learned out of the UK work in recovery was that they were using the EHR as a platform, and they supplemented that with a randomization framework, and it would be useful for people who, for physician organizations who wish to participate, to be able to have the option of triggering randomization and enrollment events within the EHR. We believe, again, those foundational standards that we already called for can be helpful, supportive elements there. Separation of research and clinical data, terminology for pre-approval, new chemical entities, biologics, and devices. So in a pre-approval status, you know, I get some opaque identifier from the investigational sponsor. My patient may be exposed to the compound or to placebo. I don't have any clean way of documenting that work in the EHR in ways that are aligned with the terminology that we already use. And then ONC should work with stakeholders to address other EHR opportunities relative to research. So, David, anything from you and any questions from the task force here before we move on?
Just a little bit of a real-world comment on the mapping question, mapping to a common research data model. As Clem mentioned earlier, we heard really interesting testimony from three different research groups that are in the process of trying to figure out how to take data out of a FHIR message and put it into their data models. And it may on the surface sound like a simple problem, but the feedback we got from the experts was that it's anything but trivial to figure out how to properly extract data out of FHIR and put it into a more relational-like model. So the lead effort, I think, in that space right now is between OMOP and FHIR, and particular George Ripsack, who runs the Odyssey database work, was very positive about that process. And so we're basically saying, yeah, this is not automatic. It needs to be funded and managed to completion so that everyone can benefit from it.
Yes. Let's move on two more slides, I believe. One more. All right. And then lastly, or second to lastly, and not second to leastly, we recommend that ONC add sections to the ISA to track relevant interoperability priorities relative to the harmonization of clinical and administrative data and track items being addressed by et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, here again, we're looking for maximal use of captured clinical data to improve the downstream administrative processes of the U.S. healthcare system and reduce physician and patient burden related to the administrative processes of care. As I've noted to a number of people, when we think about the U.S. healthcare system, we have this dichotomy of incredibly kind and caring and highly professional and knowledgeable clinicians and support staff who provide amazing care, and an almost 180 view on the administrative side of a cold and uncaring and somewhat heartless and not well-designed set of systems related to administrative care, the administrative side of the U.S. healthcare system. And we believe that aligning more towards the clinical care model and using that clinical care model to drive administrative processes is the right end stage for the U.S. healthcare system. And then we request that ONC harmonize the implied administrative data model expressed in X12 and NCPDP to USCDI. So here's another USCDI call out. And again, we make pains to note that we're not calling, we're in fact calling for the opposite. We're not calling for the EHR to and the USCDI to be driven by administrative needs. In fact, what we're calling for is the clinical needs expressed in the USCDI to be maximally useful to drive administrative burden reduction. And then the last one, which is definitely not leastly, is situational awareness. We heard from the SANER task force, the SANER group out of HL7 that's working on standards for situational awareness. This may be a USCDI alignment issue. The data that is used in situational awareness often is not EHR data. It's HRIS data, it's supply chain management data, it's you know, hospital bed status, ICU status, ER bed status. Oftentimes, these data are collected in systems that are not the EHR, but are still part of the machinery of providing clinical care. And so, we recommend that ONC list situational awareness interoperability priorities in the ISA. And that we heard from the SANER work or task, the SANER group, that the way that, for example, HHS and states align on situational awareness policy is often, as so many things in healthcare are, a little stovepipe. So I've got, you know, one thing that's associated with pandemic preparedness, another thing associated with emergency preparedness, a third thing associated with requirements under EMPLA, but they're actually foundationally exactly the same thing, you know, providing a higher level dashboard that allows for situational awareness of resource limitations in a geography, and that aligning on policy and aligning on funding requirements would help address activity in this area. So we've thrown a lot at you. I'm sure y'all have additional comments. This was a pretty meaty set of recommendations that took a fair amount of deliberation to get to.
Thank you so much, Arian and David, for sort of boiling this down and presenting it to the task force. Again, and as I pointed out in our public chat, I think our goal as a task force is to take these recommendations to understand that they are being transmitted directly to the ONC and to the national coordinator. So we needn't sort of reiterate those that do not apply directly to USCDI, but really to identify within this whether there are specific recommendations that would be appropriate for us to add it, as part of our task three that relate directly to USCDI and its future direction. So I did, as I noted in the chat, capture one of these and put it into our Google Doc for our future consideration. I think Mark Savage is, you know, may have another one that he's going to draft, but I think that anything that jumps out to task force members as specific additions to what we should be including in our recommendations, would love to hear about that either now or as you've had time to think about this. Adding that as comments in our Google Doc would be wonderful. I'll just say that certainly what I heard in these presentations is that there may be an opportunity for us to consider recommending whole new data classes. Situational awareness certainly is one that would move USCDI in a substantially different direction. It's really been focused on core clinical data as opposed to situational awareness data, which arguably falls outside of the definition of EPHI, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to be outside the definition of USCDI. I think also administrative data. I mean, much work has been done on administrative data and the harmonization of that with clinical data, but is there a need for an administrative data class within USCDI? I think that's a question we should consider. And then also research. Obviously, a lot of discussion here about research, supporting research, the interoperability of data to support research. Are there data elements that perhaps belong within a research data class, perhaps about enrollment? I think consent. There are some key issues that are needed to support research data or data interoperability to support research that may warrant inclusion. So I think as the task force considers this information, think about whether there's a need for new classes, new directions, or new elements specific here. So, David, go right ahead.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that, but there may be even easier areas where it's not necessarily a new class, but it's expanding the depth of an existing class. So, for example, one of the issues that we heard when we surveyed the research community was, particularly in the case of COVID research, that ventilator settings were often not included in the data extracted from the EHR. I don't know that that's necessarily a new data class, but if that content is missing, it's an inhibition to the research.
That's a really good point. And David, you've missed a lot of our discussions. I mean, certainly, we as a task force encourage stakeholders to identify new classes and data elements and to submit those through the OnDeck process. And of course, we as a task force also have that opportunity, especially here in our phase three work. So, good point. Ventilator settings, is that something worth adding? If any of the task force members want to sort of take a stab at that, that would be a good one to add to the spreadsheet. Our shared spreadsheet, which we will be considering at a future meeting.
Yep, and I would note there that's a sort of subclass of device interoperability where there are data that are being collected about a patient that could well be normalized to existing USCDI data classes, but aren't often are often collected in bespoke device systems and aren't unified in a patient-centered way. And so I think what David's noting is that there may well be USCDI data classes, for example, on results that are perfectly situated to collect vent settings or collect other results that are captured by medical devices, but where there isn't the interoperability and aggregation that's available to drive interoperability for those elements. David, was that a helpful gloss on what you were just saying?
Yeah. Yes.
Can I comment on that, Mrs. Clem?
Yeah, go ahead, Clem.
So there's a whole variety of sort of structured variables in intensive care that are also valuable, and I think we were pushing for, and I don't know if we achieved, that we would get other, a class of structured data that's already in a machine. So that includes things like dialysis settings, ECMO settings, pump assist settings, and those all would be valuable, and I think they could be easily picked off of machines. There's a lot of ICU systems. Anyway, that's enough, I guess.
Absolutely, Clem, I completely agree.
Yep.
And it's the same thing for wearable. You know, increasingly we have patient-centered wearables. We have medical devices like CGMs that are medical devices that are collecting important contextual information about patients and patient care that again should have the same level of alignment and collection.
Any other thoughts from the task force?
Stephen, it's Mark. Could I ask
just a
broader question? I really appreciated one of the sort of the broader themes here was looking at other federal agencies. And so I dropped some comments in the box about the FDA software pre-cert program and sort of device data. And I think it's something for us to be looking at. In 2 years, there's going to be a lot more happening. So do we do work now in order to be ready for that? I also appreciated sort of the weaving in of different, what I'll call use cases, different ways in which the same USCDI data gets used for different purposes, like administrative or clinical care or research. And I just wanted to ask a sort of an open-ended question to David and Arian, if there are any other what I'll call use cases that you think are priorities for this task force to be considering. I will give an example for me. I continue to think that shared care planning is and what's required to do that is important now, but even more important to try to build that in going forward. So that's an example, not meant to seed your response, but that's why I'm asking, are there priority use cases in your mind that we should be thinking about?
I think if we go up one slide, so first of all, Mark, just related to maximal reuse, we make specific comment on analyte machines being maximally deployed to support, for example, resulting in ways that are standard. I think Clem rightly notes that in some cases, the way that Loinc works, you actually have to have this, it's sort of the specimen plus the analyte machine that leads to the Loinc code, but at least the analyte machine should be maximally situated to make that easy, as opposed to a completely different terminology that comes out of FDA that then is disconnected with clinical care. So I think that's in alignment with our recommendations. The future, the really important work that we did not get to, just because we were heavily occupied with the top two priorities, which were health equity and the significant learnings out of COVID-19, are indeed care plans and chronic disease management, in addition to portal data aggregation across multiple portals, occupation and line of work. Again, a little miss here on these slides, but price transparency and data sharing between federal and commercial entities, in particular driving multiple use cases that are associated with care of veterans, care of military service members, care of people under the care of the IHS. Et cetera.
Arian, this is Leslie. I want to just follow up with that question. When you looked at future considerations, did you ever look at disease groups, it's particular cancer patients, where the completeness of the record might not include the particular equipment, the diagnostic equipment, the treatment equipment devices, and yet are critical in terms of care coordination. So whether it's cancer or other disease-centric states, have you looked at that?
We did not. That's a really helpful comment. I think we would put that under our first priority relative to particular chronic disease management. And cancers are one of these quasi-acute, quasi-chronic disease management, but hopefully over time, more and more cancers are a chronic disease condition and certainly are associated with shared decision-making and shared care planning.
And significant coordination, too.
Indeed.
Thought that came to mind when listening to Leslie, in theory, home care would use the same nomenclatures as more traditional locations of care, but given that in the future home care may be mediated through non-EHR mechanisms, home care might be a specific area to track.
Yep. So we have
Thanks, David.
We have more than enough standards priorities to contemplate. There's always more work to be done to make the U.S. healthcare system a more patient-friendly and more interoperable, higher quality, lower cost system.
And you guys are the two to help. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Leslie.
All right. Seeing no hands up, I will again thank Ariane and David for taking the time to prepare and present this materials. Really appreciate it. I trust this slide deck is or will soon be posted in the high-tech calendar for today's meeting, and we can reference that. And again, I invite task force members to identify either particular data classes elements or general concepts that come out of this that you think should be included in our phase three work. As noted, I have tried to capture some of this myself. I actually added a row in our spreadsheet to capture this location of work, which I don't think is in there already. But if there are other items that people want to capture, that would be great.
And thank you for this alignment and for the opportunity to present.
Good. Thank you. All right. We're supposed to go to public comment in about five more minutes, which we will do. We would also like to discuss, perhaps before we go there with the task force, our calendar for phase three. As I mentioned earlier, this meeting with the ISP task force is going to be followed next week with a meeting focused on public health use cases and stakeholders. So any of you who know of other members of the public who should be joining us for that would be great. There's a note here, early start. So we're going to start a bit earlier next week. Hopefully people can accommodate that change. We are then planning to meet, this is June. So this lists July 20 and 27, which should already be on your calendars. But in looking at the work ahead, I think we need to continue to push ahead with a review of the data elements on our spreadsheet, as well as the general recommendations in the table that we have left for task three. So we are proposing adding a meeting on June 29th, where we will begin that work, then taking off the first 2 weeks of July, so no meeting the week of July 4th, which would have been on July 6th, or the following week on the 13th, then coming back together for the last 2 weeks of July, the 20th and 27th. I think the 20th, if we can schedule either an equity and disparities-focused discussion or a research-focused discussion, we will do that on the 20th. Otherwise, we will plan to use that time to continue to work through our leftover task three priorities. Then again, social determinants of health will be on the 27th of July. Remember that we really need to have our recommendations together for transmittal by the end of August. So the August schedule, I think, will remain open. August 10th is in the middle of HIMSS, so we probably would not meet that day. But I think it will depend on how we're doing as to whether we end up meeting the other Tuesdays in August, getting ready to move ourselves towards the HITAC presentation on September 9th. So I think we really do need to have our task three recommendations pretty well finalized by the end of August. So we're taking off the first half of July. August remains an open question and will otherwise be meeting on Tuesdays. Mark, you have your hand up.
Yes, thanks. I wondered if there had been any decision from ONC about USCDI submission date for V3. There had been some discussion that might move up to September from October, and thinking about whether that influences the timing of any of our work. I agree. It sounds like we've got. I'm glad we're sort of working forward and not wasting time, but just keeping that as an endpoint in mind.
And then also,
I'm here.
The question was the final submission date for USCDI V3. We had previously said as soon as that, if that date's going to be moved forward, making that clear to the community as soon as possible. Have you guys made a decision on that?
Not an exact date yet, but we're looking at sometime during the last 2 weeks of September.
Okay. Yeah, and presumably you'll be sending that out with USCDI V2 on July 8th, or do you think there's a chance we could get that out sooner?
At the latest, it'll be on issue of V2.
Okay.
Great. And then I think, Al, you pointed out on the 20th of July, we'll see the final V2 presentation.
That is to say that V2 is going to be published on July 8th. We do not... Our subsequent meeting will be the one on July 20th, and Al or others from ONC will have a chance to just kind of give a general review of what was in V2 and the other materials that will be published with it and respond to questions. So, yes, let's pull up the public comment slide and go to public comments now.
All right, operator, can we please open the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause for a brief moment to poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thank you to members of the public who join us on the phone and listen in. We really greatly value your presence and participation and welcome your comments, either in the public chat or verbally at the end here. All right. So any questions or further thoughts regarding our plans for our task three work? I just realized in looking over my notes that I wanted to capture David McCauley's earlier comment about the high bar that is set by the level 2 requirement of exchange between 4 or more vendors. So I'm going to add that in as an item for us to discuss when we get back to reviewing the items in our documents. All right. Yes, Mark and Leslie, I appreciate your comments in the public chat. Arian and David are really remarkable resources. They've worked very hard for many, many years, and it's great to have them so involved in this work.
Stephen, before we start wrapping up, I just wanted to say that I probably should have said this earlier, is that even though we're shooting for the date for release of V2, any number of things could come into play that would subject that date to change.
Ah, interesting. So the July 8th date. Of course, nothing about the future is completely predictable, but we appreciate that's a goal. Great. Well, let's go ahead and call it a day. Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention. As always, we really appreciate the engagement and commentary. I'm very excited for the remainder of our Task 3 work. I think we have a good plan, and we will see you next week with a focus on public health, use cases, and data needs. So prepare any thoughts or questions you have in that area. And also feel free to continue to add items to both the Google Doc, the table, and the spreadsheet as we have them posted. If anybody has lost those links, just let us know. We can send them back to you for the task force members. Or maybe ONC team, let's include that in the homework for people.
That would help. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you, everyone.
Have a great day.
Thanks so much. Right. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.